Application of testing within risk mitigation strategies. How much testing is enough?
I think it's a very difficult question to answer, and actually I think it's the wrong question. I think it's really what actions are needed by the stakeholders to actually reduce the risk. Testing is just one part of that component.
It should be risk-based anyway.
Maybe I could add to that that the way of thinking now, especially under the Global Food Safety Initiative, is not to think much of risk, but of vulnerabilities. And so to look at the whole supply chain and then to assess at which point in the supply chain you have a vulnerability to food fraud, and then to be able to concentrate your resources, which are limited for everybody, to concentrate your resources in that particular area where there is a vulnerability.
I would say also that it relies clearly on a vulnerability assessment and to define the number of the frequency of the kind of analytical testing you want to do and for a sort of mitigation plan, but maybe then there is also the need of the right balance between internal and external testing efforts within the companies. That means that you need to externalize sometimes analytical testing also to increase the number and the productivity of the result, but at the same time you have to keep some competence and some knowledge inside to be able also to interpret it and evaluate what you are getting as well.
Yes, it should be complemented with administrative controls, soft controls like integrity screening and whistleblowing, that sort of thing as well, not just testing.
Yes. Yeah.
Good question and a difficult question. And you see, in China, always the consumer and the government said, everything should be tested. Mm-hmm. And every product should be tested, then go to the market, but that is impossible. Only things based on risk, what needed, checked. Testing is not ensuring the safety. Testing just to check what can be delayed for a violated relation, not just testing for the safety. So that means we are much difficult, for example, for the Malami events. The government said, why you didn't test that one? You see how many chemical, everything we need testing, that only have some risk, some incidence, then that means these compounds should be tested when, sometimes, not always. For example, melamine, maybe this time China still testing. We always testing now.
I think that comes down to what we've always talked about, which is the unpredictable nature of food fraud. So testing is good when you sort of know what to test for, but sometimes, and very often you don't know, so you need to carry out more types of auditing and the soft controls that you spoke about.
Moreover, these practices are changing based on feedback to identify the risk. Then the practice is upgraded or totally changed, so it's indeed unpredictable. So broad scope screening has to be employed for this purpose.
I think something that's been great is about this conference as well, in general, is that there is more of a understanding that food safety and food safety testing is different than food fraud testing. You can still have hazards that are food safety hazards, but when you're looking at vulnerabilities or why, the reasons why things occur, it's fundamentally different. But there's still a lot of the same tests. And so, you know, like you said too, to test every one, well, that's just not efficient. And the bad guys are intelligent. Yeah. They're not E. coli.
Yes.
They're going to stop and they're going to change. And so it's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. As soon as you look, it's moved. And so I think that's, for me, something that's excellent, is that there is this understanding that it's got to be different, but it's got to tie with our base hazard assessment. So I think that's something I'm very optimistic about, that the industry is moving in that direction, but we're still staying rooted in that, the core functions.
I think we found that in investigations, a lot of the time the food fraud investigation triggers the test. It's only in a minority of cases so far in Ireland anywhere where the test has triggered the investigation. And I think we're still at that step. And the test, if there is a test available to start with for the product, and if it comes positive, it's a very strong support for a court case, and it's going to give you a good result. If the test doesn't exist, or if there's any ambiguity about the test, or if the test is done by two separate labs and you get two very different results, the test is useless. You're worse off to do a test at that stage. So, so does the test trigger the investigation, or an investigation trigger the test? I think so far we haven't been really testing our vulnerabilities, and we haven't been sampling at the point where the vulnerability becomes obvious, because we're still thinking in terms of food safety. And I know even our monitoring program, the vast majority of our tests are still done from a food safety point of view. And we haven't really moved into, we'll test at the point of vulnerability, because A, we might know where that is to start with, and we haven't really mapped our chains comprehensively enough. And B, there's so much intelligence coming in that's not food test related that triggers the investigations at the moment.
I always think you should think about testing as being a deterrent, and one of a number of deterrents, and the more that you can put into your supply chain management, the better. It's just one of the toolbox that you've got to use, auditing and so forth. It's just a part of the package.
Yeah, I mean, most testing is not really a part of a risk mitigation strategy, purely because it's after the fact. There's very little testing which actually is done in line, testing the products as they come off the line. So that it's really part of a, as Chris says, it's part of reinforcing your confidence in your risk mitigation strategy or identifying risks, but it's not part of the risk mitigation strategy itself.
And maybe move as much as possible in the first point of your food chain as much as possible, because it becomes more and more, let's say, preventive at a certain stage, even if still deterrent as well.
This conference has been, having been to three of them now, and among other meetings too, but I'm a ways in the U.S., but I come in and immerse, and it's really been fascinating to see the authenticity testing really, you know, advance over time. And it feels like, you know, with the question of what's enough, that I sense that, getting to Chris's point about deterrence, is that we're now starting to ask those questions of how do we prevent it more. And I think that is the vulnerability, and looking at a system as vulnerable, and then what do we put in place? Because these are humans that are acting. The biological organism in question is a human, not a microbe. So they can respond, and they actually read our information. So if they know that there's got to be the tests to catch it, so that they know that they will get caught. But then it's a question of how we apply those in an efficient way, and what do we need? And I think that's the next step, is what type of test do we need, and how does it really define the deterrent?
And this is probably also the issue of standardized methods, because for target analysis you have a lot of validated methods, but in this case we don't have even any proficiency testing, for example, any reference materials, so it's quite difficult actually to compare the interlaboratory, and this is also quality assurance need in this area.